People start welcoming complaints, and seeing complaints as a door to greater knowledge of the customer, breakthroughs occur. When complaints are seen as possible opportunities, then everything changes. However, most people don't want to hear complaints. They feel kicked in the stomach by a complaint. Therefore, the logical process of creating wealth is replaced by emotional survival. A store owner named Donnie was a client of ours, and as we waited in the lobby before our meeting with him, we overheard him in his office as he fielded calls about unhappy customers. Donnie said, "Oh, yeah, he's unhappy about our delivery time. Tell him I'll call him back. I don't have time for that today." Donnie didn't understand the opportunity he was passing up. Complaints threatened him and triggered his most negative emotions. Donnie was missing out on an opportunity to really learn what his customers wanted. He didn't see that if he engaged his complaints, he would solve his biggest mystery. What are the things my customers really value? That information is gold. When Donnie's not emotional, he knows it's gold because he goes to many long seminars on how to understand customers' hidden needs. The seminars teach him that the road to attracting new customers through referrals comes from understanding the customers you already have. When he goes to those seminars, he is being logical, so he takes notes like crazy. But when a real live customer complains, he becomes emotionally defensive all over again, missing his chance all over again. Donnie can't see that the customer is going to tell him how to improve his business. He can't see it because the information is disguised as a complaint. Business improvement will be spoken to him, but Donnie won't hear it. Instead, he gets threatened, gets defensive, and doesn't want to talk to him. There he was, facing someone who had experienced his work intimately, ready to tell him the change he needed to make to take it to the next level, and he didn't want to talk to him. Another opportunity to mine complaints like gold occurs when people quit the team. Usually when people quit, the owners grieve and get over it, or else they yell, "Good riddance." But one of the greatest ways to reduce turnover is to increase the attention that you pay to your exit interviews. Why did this person leave? It could tell you a lot, even if you're glad they left. People want to isolate themselves from any bad news, not realizing that bad news is good when you have a creative mind. A purely creative quest for wealth converts bad news to opportunity. You can set a new tone starting today that welcomes complaints of any kind. Soon your people realize that you're not going to flip out, melt down, or freak out if you hear about something that isn't going great. You're going to be grateful for it. When you set that tone, then complaints will be brought to you sooner and success will move forward all the faster. Lance Secretan, the founder of Manpower Incorporated, said, quote, "What would happen if we looked at a customer and saw the face of God in them? To most people, it sounds like a lofty idea. But if you see the face of God in a flower, why wouldn't you see it in the face of a customer?" End quote. Number 20. Take a step away. Henry Ford said, quote, "If there is any one secret of success, it lies in the ability to get the other person's point of view and see things from that person's angle as well as from your own." End quote. What service do you currently deliver? Anyone with a profession has one. What's the process for delivering your service? Can you take a step out of that process? Because one of the ways you can really start to make money is to remove a step from your current process. For example, Netflix took the step of going to the video store away. You no longer have to drive to the store to get a video or DVD or drive back to avoid late charges? That step is gone. They created huge, immediate wealth by removing that step. To find these steps that might be removed, ask yourself, what do my clients or customers have to do to receive my service? What process am I forcing them to do that could be eliminated? If you can take any step out of the process, they'll be delighted, because as so many social observers have noted, time is the new money. If you can simplify things for people and make it easier for them to save time, they will reward you with money. I used to set tables up in the back of the room at a place where I was speaking, where people could come back at breaks or after the speech to buy my books. Now the books are built into the speaking contract, so they're already on people's chairs when they arrive to hear me. Step removed. There's a bank here that we go to that has removed a step. It used to be that when you went into the bank, the thing you really didn't look forward to was waiting in line, just to see a teller merely to make a deposit. This bank has taken that step out. If they see someone waiting in line, they have one of their people walk up and say, "Are you making a deposit? If you are, I can take your deposit right now." They take it, they fill out the form, and we walk away not having to wait in line. So they have taken that waiting in line step out of the process. Because of that, we just rave about this bank, and some friends and relatives have already switched over to them. More wealth for the bank. No matter what service or product you deliver to anyone, even in a large organization, just ask yourself, does it have to be done this way? Can I save someone some time here? Can I take a step away? Think of the music industry. You can download music now. The step of going to the record store was taken away. A lot of times, you can just look over what your customers are going through. All of the forms they're filling out. Whatever it is, whatever you are making them do, ask yourself, do they really have to do all that? Do we really need that from them? Is there a way we can bypass that for them? Keep asking that question. As Jack Welch has said, quote, "Speed is everything. It's the indispensable ingredient of competitiveness. Speed, simplicity, and self-confidence are closely intertwined." End quote. At one time, you could just read books. But then when audiobooks came along, a whole new industry was created by the ability to have something recorded so you could listen to it, as opposed to just reading it. Soon, e-books came along, and you could just download a book. Then, music downloads happened. So if you're selling something today, you don't have to improve the product itself to accelerate your wealth. You can simply improve how it's delivered. How do you deliver what you do? Could it be done faster? Could you make it more convenient for the recipient of your work? And you don't have to be an entrepreneur with a business to make these ways drive your success curve. Even working from a cubicle in a bureaucracy, you can revolutionize the delivery of your own work, take a step away, and win a promotion from having done so. Number 21. Become surprising. Tom Peters said, quote, "The best-kept secret in the global economy today is this. When your service is awesome, you get so stinking rich, you have to buy new bags to carry all the money home." End quote. To become a legend for who you are and what your business is, the secret is to surprise people. You can't do it by just being good at what you do. Nobody walks around spreading the urban legend that you are just good at what you do. That's a boring thing to say, and boring statements evaporate, never to be repeated. They don't survive as stories. The true objective is to achieve what our good friend Darby Checkitz refers to as customer astonishment. It's the way you can really generate word of mouth and legendary status, like Jesus did when he raised Lazarus from the dead. People's jaws dropped, and the story won't stop circulating. Look for that element of surprise. Go the extra mile and do the unexpected in everything related to service. So, if somebody asks for one thing, you do just a little bit more than they ask for. Or you do it faster than they would have expected, or any little touch that surprises, because it's the element of surprise that works. It's a powerful military strategy to use the element of surprise, but it's also a tremendous wealth creation strategy. Nordstrom became a legend by startling customers. They became absurd. They were outrageous in how they served customers. One lady was worried that she couldn't get her new dress altered in time for a big party on the East Coast, and she had to catch a plane the next day. And when she got to the East Coast, she found the dress waiting for her in the hotel room with a ribbon around it and a box of chocolates and, quote, "thanks for using Nordstrom," end quote. Nordstrom would go way out of its way to absolutely startle and astonish its customers. Out of those single acts, people talked. Surprise someone enough, and they'll talk forever. People talked about Nordstrom everywhere they went, which was worth hundreds of thousands of dollars in advertising. Urban legends popped up. Soon, we didn't know which stories about Nordstrom were true, and so you too can generate outrageous word of mouth if you allow yourself to be outrageous whenever you have the chance. Most people operate in terms of customer satisfaction. They just walk around wondering whether their customers are satisfied or not. But the problem with customer satisfaction is that customers expect to be satisfied. Therefore, customer satisfaction does not create wealth. A satisfied customer never speaks to others about you. She never gets any buzz going about what you offer because she is merely satisfied. When we were in school and got a grade that was satisfactory, that was a C. C equals satisfactory. And nobody raved about or celebrated a kid getting a C in anything because it was just average. It was just getting by. Yet, most people look at their customers with the question of whether they are satisfied or not. While one of the quickest ways to wealth is to ask a different question, it's a question we first heard asked by Darby Checkets, who has appeared in our seminars, when he said, "Are you willing to astonish your customers?" Darby has since written a book called Customer Astonishment, and we recommend it highly. Don't worry if it borders on the absurd to make customer astonishment your standard. You'll get used to living out there on the edge. Soon, you will look forward to making your mind stretch by answering the question, "What could I do right now that would astonish my customer?" You are automatically thinking out of the box. You are pushing the limits of your imagination. And you're coming up with things you never came up with when you lived inside the dim world of customer satisfaction. The great car dealer Carl Sewell said, quote, "If we treat a guy well, he'll buy 20 or so cars from us over time and tell at least one friend. At $35,000 a pop, that could easily add up to $500,000. I tell everyone, from the reception desk to the service bay, that guy is a $500,000 bill walking in the store ready to be won over if we all work together to make him our best friend." End quote. One of the things that happens with an astonished customer is that he talks and talks and talks. Word of mouth has always been the best advertising for any of us. and word of mouth comes from people who are surprised by something. Anytime anything surprises you, that's what you talk about. And so the really great creative game is to get your people together to continuously ask the question, what can we do that would astonish people? You don't have to be a company to do this. You can do this yourself as an individual. How can you astonish someone who means a lot to you? Astonish. Not just please and satisfy. It opens up the brain to think in weird ways, and it inspires amazing, unforgettable actions. Number 22. Look inside your heart. Tina Turner said, quote, "What's love got to do with it?" End quote. Hall of Fame pro quarterback Fran Tarkenton has always said, "If it's not fun, you're not doing it right." A great motto for wealth creation. There's something about getting what you love to do in alignment with what you're really doing that's going to create wealth in your life faster. When you're doing something that's really fun for you, you're able to do it without watching the clock. Anything you do in that timeless state is your thing, as they used to say. It's your passion. And the advantage to you is that you do it tirelessly, with a mind open to continuous innovation. The work is not a burden, and it doesn't really feel like work. So you're more creative with it, and you've got higher energy for it. Many people watched TV and decided that real estate with no money down was the way to get money. But if they had no real love of real estate, then all the tasks they did were done in dreary linear time. They would always be watching the clock, tick-tock. They would not be in that zone where energy gets high, intuition soars, and they're making all the right moves. That would never happen. Instead, they were finding real estate to be absolute drudgery. They had no heart for it. I spent a lot of time long ago working in the world of advertising and marketing because I thought there was money there, although I didn't really love it. People always told me if you can write and be expressive and creative, the only way to make money in this society is to go into advertising. I went into it and I did all right, but I didn't really love it. So when I was in an agency that finally failed badly, I took a long walk and looked into my heart and looked back over my life. I thought, okay, I don't know what work I'm going to do next, so why don't I just take a minute and find out what I would really love to do? I couldn't think of what that was. So I took more time with it and thought, well, when have I been really, really happy? When have I really felt joy doing something? And then I remembered some talks I had given way back in the early days when I was recovering from an addiction, and I was in some 12-step programs where you would get up in front of the room and talk to groups of people about your recovery. That was the most fun and the most thrilling and the most enjoyable time of my life, to talk to a whole room full of people. So I thought, okay, well, that's a sign that maybe that's what I should be doing for a living. So I started to look around, and I remembered a guy who gave a talk to an advertising client of mine, and I thought I'd look him up and partner with him to see if I could do what he does for a living. That man's name was Dennis Deaton. He was a seminar leader and a public speaker, and I went to work for him just to apprentice with him and to find out how he did it. Soon, I was doing speeches myself and talking to rooms full of people, loving it and doing it more and more. True wealth didn't come into my life until I started doing what I loved. I also knew that I loved writing, too. So I started writing books connected with my speaking, and more success then started to come indirectly from that. So don't think it's selfish to do what you want to do. Your happiness is a wealth attractor, not the other way around. Most people have it the other way around. I'll allow myself to be happy when I make enough money, when I pay my debts, when I have a house, when I have a second home, when I have a boat, a new spouse, etc., into futile insanity. Reverse that. Do what you love, and the money will follow. Another aspect of this principle is to find ways to work with people you love working with. Sam says, quote, I don't want to get too corny, but I always say that the business I have with my wife is the business that love built. It really is, because I just love working with my wife, and I love that I am able to do the things to actually be with my family. I think people have to switch away from thinking it's either one or the other. You either have a great business that makes a lot of money, or you have a family life. You can have both. End quote. So, if you're starting to wonder how to create wealth in your life, take time to be alone. Take a long walk. Take a hot bath. Rent a cabin. Stay there for a weekend with no TV or entertainment and just be with yourself. Relax your brain and listen to your heart. It's very important to gravitate toward what you love to do, because anything you love to do is going to create wealth faster than trying to do something you think you should do or something that someone told you was a hot new opportunity. Mark Twain once said, quote, the law of work does seem utterly unfair, but there it is, and nothing can change it. The higher the pay in enjoyment the worker gets out of it, the higher shall be his pay in money also. End quote. Number 23. Get up on the bar stool. Leonardo da Vinci said, quote, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. End quote. I used to refer to this as my bar stool test, until I quit drinking, fortunately. Then I began calling it the elevator speech, what you would say if you met someone in an elevator. The bar stool test was based on you sitting on a bar stool next to some other person who says, what do you do? And now you've got 10 seconds to answer the question. It's really important to be able to describe in 10 seconds or less to a complete stranger what it is you offer, what's unique about it. You must have a very exciting way of describing what you do. If you lead a team, it helps when all your people know this short description. Then your people on the phone can say it quickly. What do you do? What separates you? What makes you different? You'll be able to state very quickly what your advantage is and why people love your work and why they would want to use your service, why they would want to pay a great deal of money for it. The advantage of keeping your story sweet and simple is that it gets to spread much faster. You actually teach other people to talk about you in this way, in a very simple way, so that when they go talk to other people, they can remember it. One of the best examples of this occurred years ago when restaurants did not deliver pizza and Domino's decided to deliver pizzas to your door. Believe it or not, to get a pizza, you used to have to get in your car and go for it or make it at home. And Domino's had a new slogan that just said, quote, Domino's Pizza Delivers, end quote. That was their whole ad campaign. That was their mission statement, their business plan, their unique selling proposition, and their branding, all spoken in three words, Domino's Pizza Delivers. It was so simple that everybody could remember it. Soon people would repeat it over and over, Domino's Pizza Delivers. Whenever there was a party going and someone would say, let's go get some pizza, someone else would immediately sing, Domino's Pizza Delivers, and they would call Domino's and get their pizza delivered. I remember when I started as a public speaker, I wanted to have something like that was short and simple and that would separate me from the rest. I was waiting until somebody who saw me speak could say it precisely, and I kind of coached it and teased it out of him until he said what I wanted, and then I used his quote everywhere. It was a quote from my friend Fred Knipe, who is an Emmy Award-winning TV screenwriter. And when he saw me speak, he said, quote, "Steve Chandler's an insane combination of Jerry Seinfeld and Anthony Robbins," end quote. Ever since he said that, everybody has been using that quote. Everybody would tell their people that's who I was. People who introduced me would say that. People who wanted to see if they wanted to have me come and speak would put that quote at the top of any email that said, "We've been thinking about using this guy," and that just sort of became my thing, and that was my bar stool talk. It was my one thing. Of course, I had to live up to it, but at the same time, it described who I was compared to other speakers. So it's really important that you get a simple, short expression in your own mind of what it is you are offering in exchange for wealth, something people can remember and repeat. When you get it crystallized and into 10 seconds, it will pay off for you. Number 24. Learn from the dolphin trainers. Mother Teresa said, quote, "There is more hunger for love and appreciation in this world than for bread," end quote. You can get more accomplished by being positive with people than being negative. We've always heard that the squeaky wheel gets the oil, and you have to raise your voice and complain to get anything done. But the truth is, if you are a real pain to deal with, you'll get sabotaged in ways you'll never even know about. Sam says, quote, "I only like working with customers I actually like. If people make too many foolish demands on me, you know, they go to the bottom of the list. My saying is actually this: the squeaky wheel gets taken off and replaced with a wheel that doesn't squeak," end quote. Dolphin trainers have figured out that if you give the dolphins a tiny fish for jumping through the hoop, the dolphins will jump through the hoop again. The trainers don't take a baseball bat and beat the dolphin for not jumping through the hoop. Animal trainers have learned over the years that positive reinforcement is the most efficient training tool in the world, and it's even more true with humans. We were once called into a little law firm that was bringing us on as consultants to help them get more referral business. In the first meeting, I said to the lawyers sitting around the table, "Let's start here. How do you reward the referrals you get right now?" Total silence. I then said, "Let's go around the table, and you can each tell me how you do that." They had nothing to say. One lawyer said it would be unethical. Soon, we had put referral tracking systems in place where someone referring a client would be thanked sincerely in many ways from many people in the firm. Not only that, but when the case had a successful outcome, the lawyer who referred the client would get a full briefing on how things turned out, with another series of thanks for contributing to such a successful outcome. Referrals more than doubled in the first year. Whatever it is you want more of, inside whatever system you are using to create wealth, ask yourself the question, how do I reward it now? In business, or in any enterprise, you get what you reward. If you are interacting with vendors, employees, customers, partners, or even supervisors, positive reinforcement for them is powerful, as opposed to criticizing how they serve you. Positive reinforcement and appreciation go a long way to getting better service, better prices, and more referrals. If you work just by yourself, and you rely on quick printers and small businesses that you outsource part of your business to, positive reinforcement holds the same power. Your world is full of dolphins who will jump through hoops for you. So, do like the dolphin trainers do, and people will serve you better and better and put you at the top of their list. They love hearing how they've helped you. The negative feedback approach is what most people do. They expect good service, and when they don't get it, they complain loudly. But they don't realize that the people they complain to will now put them at the bottom of their preferred customer list, subtly, even subconsciously, because most people are negative about complaints. Positive reinforcement works with all species. All God's creatures respond to positive reinforcement much faster than negative feedback, and yet we forget to do it. However, the more we remember to integrate it into whatever it is we are doing to create wealth, the faster wealth comes toward us. Number 25. Let people in with the in crowd. Sam Walton said, quote, "There is only one boss, the customer, and he can fire everybody in the company from the chairman on down simply by spending his money somewhere else." End quote. One of the best ways to create wealth is to look for ways you can have an inner circle of exclusivity. If you're doing a special introductory evening, don't have it be open to all comers. Have it be open to a certain number. If more want to come, put them on a waiting list for the next time. Anytime you can really become exclusive, you increase the word of mouth. People talk about you. Harley Davidson stumbled onto this when they ran short of product at one point, and people had to go on a waiting list to buy a motorcycle. The company was worried that it would turn customers off, but the opposite happened. It increased the desire for Harley Davidsons. It made them look like marketing geniuses, so they kept the policy in. Now everyone waits his turn. You can do the same. You can look for ways for exclusivity and limitation and be real about it so that it increases your ability to make money. People want to be a part of a special inside group. You will be using the law of supply and demand to your advantage. It's basic economics. When the supply of something decreases and demand increases, the price can naturally go up. That's why single-family houses in fast-growing areas increase in price. With less supply in the market and more demand from buyers, the price naturally increases. So if you can use this in your business and create a real supply and demand scenario where you have limited supply and more demand, you will prosper. You don't have to always have more than enough for everyone. Sometimes our coaching clients say, "It's unfair if I don't have enough for every single customer." But think about it. You can't anyway. There are a lot more customers in your market area than you can have enough supply for, so you might as well use that fact to your advantage and really strengthen your pricing. You can afford to increase your price, and you can afford to do the other extra kind of things to make the actual service that you are doing a lot more valuable to people. Most people don't see the value of putting a limit on what they offer. Their sense of greed and need are too great. We have a client we will call Suzanne, who was putting on her quarterly seminar on fitness. She had 75 people signed up, and we asked her how many people she wanted to attend the event. "Well, wow, we could put 200 in there." "Yeah, but what's reasonable?" "We could get around 110 or maybe 115. "Great. So why not limit the attendance to 100? Don't let anybody come in over 100. Let everybody know that you've got 25 seats left and that's it." "No, no, no. We can get 105. I don't want to turn away that money. I need it. I need it. God knows I need it." Suzanne couldn't yet see that limitation would create value. If she limited the seating, people would want to ensure their seats faster, and she could eventually charge more per seat and spend less on advertising because the best advertising slogan of all time is sold out. If she limited seating to 100 and sold out quickly, she would have even more success selling her next event because she could tell people, now the last one was sold out and we had to turn people away. Those people were put on a waiting list, so they are coming to this one. Would you like to come to this one? And people would sign up immediately. Most people don't understand limitation. They don't see that it creates value. They think somehow they should always vacuum up every penny from every straggler and always fit them in. Anybody with money is welcome always because our need is so great. Sam's studio business was the first one in his area to say, we're only going to put 6 kids in a 3-year-old class, and we're only going to put 12 kids in a class of 9-year-olds. At the time, there were competing studios that put 18, 20, or 26 in a class because they were always willing to cram the extra people in there for the money. They needed the money so badly. But wealth and success don't come from desperation. Customers tend to want what they can't have. They value it more. Limitation creates a burning desire in your customer base that wasn't there before. Everything shifts. You don't need to vacuum in that extra dollar today. You want to be successful long term. When the Cleveland Indians built their new ballpark, they built it smaller than the older one. People said, wait, you're nuts. Because the population's bigger than before, the fan base is larger. They just couldn't understand how limitation increased the value. And once Cleveland started selling out their games, people bought future games like crazy. And the players probably played better, too, in front of a packed house instead of those depressing, half-empty ballparks. Everything was better. Dictate the limitation. Limit your availability, and you will make your potential unlimited. Number 26. Cut players from the team. Harvey McKay says, quote, it's not the people you fire who make your life miserable. It's the people you don't fire who make your life miserable. End quote. Tom Peters is a business guru and former McKinsey consultant whose many books and lectures have done more to transform top American businesses than any other person's in the last 20 years. We go to his website every week and always learn something valuable at www.tompeters.com. Peters recently posted a formula on his website for making a business or any team truly great. We were delighted to see this formula because it matched up exactly with our own experience of working with leaders and teams over the past years. This formula works, and it's so simple, it might not be taken seriously. In fact, it's so simple, it almost embarrasses us to put it in here. But here goes. One promise. Follow the formula and your numbers will jump through the roof. Our experience proves it. Quote, the way to succeed. Hire sunny, fire gloomy. Hire promote those with sunny dispositions. Fire those with perpetually gloomy dispositions. Hint, the farther up the organization you go, the more important this gets. Rule. Leaders are not permitted to have bad days, especially on bad days. Rule. One sad dog can infect a group of 100. Rule. One energetic, optimistic, sunny soul can motivate an army to move a mountain. End quote. If you're in a professional relationship with someone who is not in harmony with the rest of the team, or with your own values or commitment to success, don't hesitate even for a second to end that relationship. Remember, you didn't take vows. This isn't about loyalty. It's about success. We coach a lot of business owners who are afraid to let a toxic person go. They're afraid they don't have anyone to replace that person with. Like Tom Peters says, fire gloomy and deal with the fear instead of continuing to deal with that person. You'll be happy you did. In all our years of coaching, we've never known anyone who regretted firing a gloomy person. However, we know countless people who regretted keeping those people on too long. They all wish they had acted sooner, even for the sake of the other person. You are setting them free from an unhappy work situation. You can tell them that they are the right person in the wrong job, and you're going to help them find the right job. You'll be amazed at how many people take the firing as a badly needed wake-up call and turn their professional lives around afterward. Give that gift to your difficult person today. You'll be glad you did. Number 27. Love your enemy. Herbert Hoover said, quote, "Competition is not only the basis of protection to the consumer, but it is the incentive to progress." End quote. The brilliant marketing consultant Jay Abraham has transformed hundreds of businesses in his lifetime, including our own. He says, quote, "When it comes to your life or business, it really comes down to grow or die." End quote. This is an extremely powerful but frequently overlooked concept. Even if you are somewhat satisfied with your life or business progress, you cannot stagnate if you want to keep on living and thriving. And competition forces you to grow or die. The great business analyst Peter Drucker said, quote, "Either you work hard to make obsolete and replace or improve your current business model, product, or service, or your competition will do it for you and to you." End quote. This is even more true in personal life, where openness to growth, openness to finding new levels of energy, and openness to more intelligent goals is vital to happiness and life itself. In human success, as in nature, if you stop something from growing, you will kill it. Your competitors, therefore, must not be seen as a bad thing. They are not. They are here to inspire your own growth and enlightenment. Most people see competition as trouble, but your competitors can be your greatest teachers. First of all, they will make mistakes for you that you can learn from, so watch them closely. They can also do new things that you can also learn and grow from. You can take their best non-protected practices and make them your own. And appreciate also that they can advertise for you. Most competitors don't know how to do highly targeted direct response advertising, so they will advertise in such a way that people will respond to the general idea, not a particular company. Their ads will have people come into them and come to you too. You can also study versions of competitors in other cities. As you visit other cities' newspapers, other cities' yellow pages, even on the internet, start looking at the communications of your competitors. They will teach you a great deal. In your study, it is important to keep your intention focused on releasing all negative feelings about competition. Competition has always made people better, not worse, at what they do. Even internal competition. One of the best things you can do to a sales staff, in our experience as sales trainers and coaches, is to bring in a brand new sales superstar. Add her to the staff and let her become the number one salesperson. Watch what happens. Everyone else gets better. Therefore, competition is always good. It's never the reason you're having a hard time attracting wealth, although many people think it's the primary reason they are having trouble. Wayne Calloway was the chairman of PepsiCo from 1986 to 1996. He said, quote, "Nothing focuses the mind better than the constant sight of a competitor who wants to wipe you off the map," end quote. The fact that you have competitors means that your business is an attractive industry that has enough interest to sustain multiple operators. If you are the only one in a new industry and no one has ever heard of the service that you are providing, you have a monumental job of educating consumers to why you exist and why they should use you. Your competitors can do a lot of that work for you. Customers don't care if your good service ideas are original or borrowed. They just want to be served in the best way they can. Success is a logical process, and the only time it goes south and gets off the track is when emotions creep in. And one of the most destructive and unnecessary emotions is to think fearful things about your competitors, to let them scare you. Competition gets a game going. When people play games, it awakens them to a higher level of performance rather than just going to work every day. Competition gets a spirited element introduced into your work. How can we beat them? How can we offer something better? It can be viewed as fun and not a threat. When you hear a competitor is moving in, the best response is, bring them on. Number 28. Deliver experience. Henry Ford said, quote, "Wealth, like happiness, is never attained when sought after directly. It comes as a byproduct of providing a useful service," end quote. One of the first things we do with our clients is to get them to stop advertising and making big claims about themselves. Stop networking. Stop schmoozing. Stop getting your name out. No one was ever moved to tears by a brochure. Most people, by wanting to get their name out there, put way too many costly, time-wasting, unnecessary steps into the sales process. Instead, give your prospective customer an experience of how good you are. Back in the 1940s, vacuum cleaner salespeople, the ones who were really successful, would go inside a home in the suburbs and actually throw some awful dirt on the rug. There they were, sitting in the living room with the woman of the house, and they had just thrown dirt on the rug. The woman would jump up and say, "Oh no, I can't believe you did that." And the salesperson would say, "I'll bet you think I will not be able to get this up." Then he would go to his car and bring in his vacuum cleaner and clean the rug, making it cleaner than ever. The experience of having that machine actually clean something on her carpet made that customer really want to have that product. She has now experienced how good it is. Anytime you can do more than just claim things, do more than just hand brochures or CDs or DVDs to people, you can create wealth faster. Look for the ways you can deliver the experience of what it is that you have. That way they will come back for more. And you want them coming back for more. One of the reasons, for example, we don't ever go to certain restaurants is because we haven't been to those restaurants before. People do things they are comfortable doing. They do things they have successfully done before. There are people who go to grocery stores that don't even have the best prices because they're comfortable with the experience of going there. They might not even have the best service, but they have comfort. They have gone there so many times, it feels like their personal store. It is important to learn ways to give people that feeling, and it can only come from experience. It can't come from an email or a brochure. Notice how many restaurants and little businesses sit empty most of the time. The same is true with individuals at home offices who offer a service, just sitting there with no business, hoping their email attack works, hoping the new website draws people. The reason people are not doing business with them is because they haven't done it before. It's as if the owner is paralyzed with this paradox. How do I get repeat business from people who have not done business with me? We wrote an entire book on how to solve this paradox called The Small Business Millionaire, because you really can do something. There are countless ways that you can get people to experience who you are, and a lot of it has to do with having a generous, open hand. You've got to open your hand and give a little bit up front so people can experience what it is that you are offering and love it and come back for more. The best seminar we've ever attended in the personal growth field is Byron Katie's 9-Day School for the Work. It cost a few thousand to attend, and it was worth every penny because of her brilliantly transformative guidance. And the most amazing thing about Katie is that you can get everything from her for free if you want to. Her two websites, thework.com and byronkatie.com, allow you to download audios, videos, interviews, worksheets, articles, and more of her treasure than you'd have time to take in during a single day. She gives it all away up front. The result? Do the math. Over 300 people paid around $3,000 each for the school we attended. That's wealth creation at its best. And the people were there because of how much of Katie they had already experienced. People think if you give it away, you can't charge for it. Absolutely not true. The opposite is true. Often, when we talk to our clients about giving money-back guarantees, they get afraid to do even that, even though it would cause people to come more confidently to experience their service. Sam says, quote, "I've been doing money-back guarantees in our business for almost 10 years now, and I never regretted it." You've got to think in the way of the open hand. People aren't going to take advantage and abuse you. That's fear-based thinking. You know, give them an inch and they'll take a mile. If you're willing to really put yourself out there and say, "We're so good that we will just refund your money if you're not happy," people will love you for that. Most of our competitors don't do that. They're just too afraid. End quote. When people don't create wealth, it's usually because their fear is blocking it from coming in. One of the mental blocks that people put up is the block about the personality and the character of their customers. We hear people talk all the time about untrustworthy customers. They dwell on how they really don't like them. But what they've really done is taken their own self-loathing and projected it out onto the customer, which creates a nightmare. Going into business works better when it's not a nightmare. There's only one way to have wealth really flow to you, and that is to love your customer and to put your customer's needs ahead of yours. You can assume that your customer is, at the very least, as good-hearted and trustworthy as you are. Why wouldn't she be? Why wouldn't he be? You are a customer when you go out. Now, why wouldn't that customer just be you? When Nordstrom decided to love their customers, it just shocked the world. All the things they allowed their customers to do, as if their customers were trusted friends and family members, which, in the end, they are. There's 1 out of 20 who is confused and who will cause you a problem. And look at your family. There's 1 out of every few family members who are the same. Be happy to allow prospective customers to fully experience your service. Be happy to give them everything you can. Their experience of you is what sells in the long run, more than any sales or marketing program ever will. Number 29. Learn to keep breathing. Steve Martin said, quote, "I've got to keep breathing. It'll be my worst business mistake if I don't," end quote. Success flows faster to open, creative minds. The brain that is fed a steady diet of oxygen produces more ideas. People who are in top physical condition have more energy, more creativity, and are in a better state of mind. They are happier and more fun to deal with. Elizabeth Barrett Browning lived for years as a sickly child and only regained her strength after moving to Italy, where she became one of the world's greatest poets. Her final conclusion about life was, quote, "He lives most life who breathes most air," end quote. When people fully understand the physical element of their success, it often surprises them. That time off they take to walk or work out or play a sport is actually adding to their success rather than postponing it, as most people fear it would. Bobby Fischer was the only American in recent times to ever become the world chess champion. He beat the great Russian Boris Spassky. He said that the primary reason that he beat Spassky, he and Spassky had skill levels that were very similar, was that he prepared by swimming laps underwater. By doing this, he had a great deal more oxygen going to his brain during the chess match than Spassky. Spassky was a heavy smoker, was overweight, and saw chess as only a mental game. All you use is your brain, so why do you have to take care of your body? When people really understand the power of integrating mind, body, and spirit,